Pretty heavy. Pretty heavy. That's good. Surah. Excuse me. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Sura Dvisham Shriyam Guptam Aushanasyapi Vidyaya Achidyadan Mahendraya Vaishnavya Vidyaya Vibhu Suradvisham Shriyam Guptam Aushanasyapi Vidyaya Achidyadan Mahendraya Vaishnavya Vidyaya Vibhu Suradvisham Shriyam Guptam Aushanasyapi Vidyaya Achidyadan Mahendraya Vaishnavya Vidyaya Vibhu Chant. Maharajis. Suradvisham, of the enemies of the demigods. Shriyam, the opulences. Guptam, protected. Oshanasya, of Shukracharya. Api, although. Vidyaya, by the talents. Achidya, collecting. Adat, delivered. Mahaindraya, unto King Indra. Vaishnavya, of Lord Vishnu. Vidyaya, by a prayer. Vibhu, the most powerful Vishvarupa. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. The opulence of the demons, who are generally known as the enemies of the demigods, was protected. was protected by the talents and tactics of Shukracharya. But Vishwarupa, who was most powerful, composed a protective prayer known as the Narayan Kavacha. By this intelligent mantra, he took away the opulence of the demigods and gave it to Mahendra, the king of heaven. Purport. The distinction between the demigods, devas, and demons, asuras, is that the demigods are all devotees of Lord Vishnu, whereas the demons are devotees of demigods like Lord Shiva, Goddess Kali, and Goddess Durga. Sometimes the demons are also devotees of Lord Brahma. For example, Hiranyakasipu was a devotee of Lord Brahma. Ravana was a devotee of Lord Shiva. And Mahishasura was a devotee of Goddess Durga. The demigods are devotees of Lord Vishnu, Vishnu Bhakta Smritodayava. Whereas the demons, Asuras Tad Viparyayaha, are always against the Vishnu Bhaktas or Vaishnavas. To oppose the Vaishnavas, the demons become devotees of Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, Kali, Durga, and so on. In the days of yore, many long years ago, there was animosity between the devas and the asuras. And the same spirit still continues. For the devotees of Lord Shiva and Goddess Durga are always envious of Vaishnavas, who are devotees of Lord Vishnu. This strain between the devotees of Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu has always existed. In the higher planetary systems, fights between the demons and the demigods continue for a long, long time. Herein we see that Vishwarupa made for the demigods a protective covering, saturated with a Vishnu mantra. Sometimes the Vishnu mantra is called Vishnu Dvara, and the Shiva mantra is called Shiva Dvara. We find in the Shastras that sometimes the Shiva Dvara and Vishnu Dvara are employed in the fights between the demons and the demigods. The word Sura Dvisham, which in this verse means of the enemies of the demigods, also refers to the atheists. Srimad Bhagavatam elsewhere says that Lord Buddha appeared for the purpose of bewildering the demons or atheists. The Supreme Personality of Godhead always awards his benediction to devotees. The Lord himself confirms this in Bhagavad Gita 9:31. Kaunteya pranijanihi name bhakta pranashyati. O son of Kunti, declare it boldly that my devotee never perishes. Jnana tamarandasya gyananjana salakaya chakshu militam jena tasmai shri garave namaha. Pancha kalpatubhyas cha kripasindubhyeva cha patitanam bhavanevyo vaishnavevyo namo namaha. So this last quote by Srila Prabhupada, son of Kunti, declare it boldly that my devotee never perishes. This is a very helpful quote, very encouraging for us. Because on a collective basis, we're concerned about our society for Krishna consciousness. We're concerned about spreading the holy name, spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world. And we see that the demoniac forces are very, very strong. At the same time, we hear that this movement is destined to be spread to every town and village. And we're seeing this as well. Gradually we're seeing this come to pass. And so this gives us faith in Krishna's words on a collective basis, also on an individual basis. Sometimes it's a little difficult for us to understand this because we go through various types of suffering, and it's nice to hear that Krishna is protecting us. At the same time, sometimes it's not so easy to see how Krishna is protecting us. Sometimes devotees come to the point of even being a little upset at Krishna. We might not be upset at Krishna, but we might not like so much how he's dealing with us. Or we might wish he was dealing with us in another way. So this is an indication of a little bit of a lack of faith on our part. So Krishna not only tells us that he's protecting us in so many different ways, but he also shows us, and Prabhupada explains, just like when we hear that Krishna is protecting us, or when we pray to Lord Sringadeva for protection, normally a devotee prays for protection in the sense that we don't want to fall down. We want to keep advancing in spiritual life. It's not the highest form of prayer to have a list of material desires that we want Krishna to fulfill, including our healthy bodies, our long lasting youth, etc. But Krishna does protect us in that way as well. Just like Prabhupada explains that once one is surrendered to Krishna, the material difficulty becomes minimized, right? This is Krishna's protection. So when he's saying my devotee never perishes, he also means in terms of material protection. Not that the body never perishes, but at least Prabhupada explains if a devotee should be killed in various circumstances, what happens instead? Remember the example that Prabhupada gave? Get a cut on the finger. So when we're undergoing some material misery, whether it's a cut on the finger, whether it's a hit over the head, or whether it's something even more severe than that, a devotee doesn't say, well, why is Krishna doing this to me? Actually, a devotee says, thank you, Krishna, for minimizing the results of my sinful activities. And Krishna does this so that we can continue to make more forward progress. The nature, the idea of punishment is to give some chastisement in some form or another so that the person can come to a higher level of understanding. That's why people go to jail. It helps them reflect, and supposedly there's some program of rectification. And if they're good, then they go from cell C to cell A, and they get off on parole. So with the devotee as well. Once we've realized, okay, I surrender. I have to serve Krishna. So Krishna sees, well, this devotee's learned his or her lesson, and therefore I'll minimize that the reaction, because it's not such a severe reaction is not necessary. But because the material desires still remain, to one degree or another, reactions are there. Or Krishna's special mercy is there to keep us continuing to understand the nature of this material world and the futility of trying to enjoy within it. And we suffer to learn all the lessons that we have to learn. So this is another form of Krishna's protection. He's ensuring that we don't become vanquished. He's ensuring that we continue to advance. So it's nice to be able to see that when we're faced with adversity, that actually this is Krishna's special mercy. Not why is Krishna doing this, or please Krishna, minimize my suffering. Maybe we can't pray like Queen Kunti prays for more suffering. Has anyone prayed like that recently? Raise your hand. I know one great soul that did. Bhakti Tirtha Swami and I were in Argentina together, came down to visit. And we were writing our Vyasa Puja offerings together, and he showed me his. And that was the offering where he was asking to take on the suffering of all the devotees. I said, do you really mean this? And he said, yes, I do. And then when he became very sick, he said to me, well, I wasn't expecting it that soon. Because I think in his offering, he says, I'm like the following year or something like that. And then 3 months later. So, but normally, normal souls like ourselves don't usually pray like that. We don't have to because it comes naturally anyway. It's not that we like it, but we can like it. We can enjoy the challenge. It deepens our meditation on the holy name, on Krishna, on our understanding of Krishna consciousness. And it purifies our understanding of each other as well. I read a number of months ago, I read this one verse in the 11th canto that really had an effect on me. I'd read it before, but sometimes you have, it has to be the right time and the right, you have to be in the right state of consciousness for Prabhupada's words or anyone's words to really have an effect. And this particular purport did that to me or had that on me. I wanted to share it. Many of you have probably read it, and it's probably impacted you as well. The verse before it, this is the song of the Avanti Brahmin. You've read that chapter, 11th canto. So the verse before this verse deals with the adibhautic misery that we're afflicted by in this material world. Misery is inflicted upon us by other living entities. There's one living entity especially that causes us a lot of misery. So many species of life, so many living entities, but there's one in particular. It's not the mosquito. It's the human being. So the purport explains here. Let me see the verse. Yes. My dear Uddhava, in this regard, a most pious story is told, and I shall now describe it to you. Please listen with careful attention. And in the purport, the Lord will now relate to Uddhava a historical account which teaches how to tolerate the insults of others. Once a certain sannyasi was insulted in many ways by impious men. However, with determination, he remembered that he was suffering the fruit of his own previous karma. I will narrate to you his story and that which he spoke. So the purport is given by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Do any of you remember this purport? It's quite profound. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur comments as follows. Often those who give up the materialistic path and devote themselves to renunciation are attacked by impious persons. So this refers to all of us, not just, we're all on the path of renunciation. This analysis, however, is superficial, since the punishment is actually the cumulative result of one's past karma. So in other words, it's not that we're not being attacked by impious persons, or it's not that we're not being insulted by others. That's happening, but it goes much deeper than that. If we just let it stop there, then we point the finger and we don't learn very much from it. In fact, we become vindictive, perhaps. Since the punishment is actually the cumulative result of one's past karma. Some renunciants show lack of tolerance when presented with the remnants of their previous sins, and thus are forced to enter again onto the path of impious life. What does that mean? He explains later, but the path of impious life, you did this to me, so I'll do this to you. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore instructs that one should become as tolerant as a tree. If the neophyte on the path of devotional service to the Lord's pure devotees is attacked by envious persons, he must accept it as a consequence of his previous fruitive activities. One should be intelligent and avoid future unhappiness by rejecting the ethic of an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. If one refuses to enter into enmity with envious men, they will automatically leave him alone. Most of the time, perhaps. But the point of this purport is it's actually very profound if we think about what we experience on a daily basis. Because somehow or other, because we're living in the age of quarrel, because we're conditioned souls, either we feel offended or we are offended in one way or another by someone or another. And in fact, we might have a list in our minds that goes back many years of all the offenses committed towards us by various personalities, including devotees. So what is actually going on? What is being explained here? That person is not the cause. That person has his or her own problems, and Krishna made the arrangement to put us both together. And due to that person's problems, might have committed an offense, might have insulted us. But it's not that person's fault. It's not Krishna's fault either. Whose fault is it? It's our fault. And it's a great challenge to, at least for me, to train myself to think like that, to not take offense or not feel inimical towards another person who I consider has treated me in a way that I don't deserve. Actually, in relation to that, after reading this, I remembered that purport by Srila Prabhupada in the 12th chapter of the Gita. Do we have a Gita handy? It's very similar to what's being described here. And I had read it so many times, but at this particular moment after reading this, I thought of it in a deeper way, or it affected me in a deeper way. You've all read this so many times, I'm sure. Prabhupada explains. A pure devotee is never disturbed in any circumstances, nor is he envious of anyone, nor does a devotee become his enemy's enemy. He thinks, this person is acting as my enemy due to my own past misdeeds. So it is better to suffer than to protest. In Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.8, It is stated that tenu kampam susamikshamano punjana evatmikritam vipakam. Whenever a devotee is in distress or has fallen into difficulty, he thinks it is the Lord's mercy upon him. He thinks, thanks to my past misdeeds, I should suffer far, far greater than I'm suffering now. So it is by the mercy of the Supreme Lord that I am not getting all the punishment I am due. I am just getting a little by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, he is always calm, quiet, and patient, despite many distressful conditions. Devotee is always kind to everyone, even to his enemy. So not only is our punishment being minimized in terms of what happens to us physically, but also in terms of the mental pain that we feel that's superficially caused by others, that's being minimized also. So to feel some type of animosity, it doesn't, there's no justification for that, if you think about it. Rather than feel animosity, it's good to feel a little compassion perhaps, because we know that that person who is causing, who has committed that activity, that offense, is going to be suffering the same way that I'm suffering now for having committed a similar offense in the past. I don't want that person to suffer. Just like Jesus Christ, Prabhupada always gives the example of Jesus Christ begging Krishna to forgive them for their ignorance. So that same feeling of compassion, it's nice to have that. Haridas Thakur, another example. He felt so sorry for those soldiers who tried to kill him, because they would be killed if they didn't kill him. He felt sorry for them. So he played this whole trick, made like he was dead, so they wouldn't be killed to protect them. So it's a great challenge for us to come to that level. At least if we can make that mental adjustment and not feel so much negativity towards others, either throughout the day or just in general, maintain some type of inimical attitude in our minds, especially sometimes it comes if we're chanting our rounds and think about someone who's a this or that. We tend to magnify the bad qualities of someone that we feel some type of enmity towards. It's a complete distraction in our lives. And if there's anyone we need to forgive, really, it's not even that person, because that person isn't the cause. If there's someone to forgive, it's ourselves. And sometimes that's a little difficult as well. But we need to really know where to focus in terms of the cause of the problem. And if we can do that, then our lives change, actually. They change drastically. Drastically. You know, I was reading another verse in purport in the first canto that had a lot to do with this. This is when Maharaj Parikshit came across the bull and the cow who were being tortured. And he was furious. And he was asking, who's to blame for all this? And the bull wouldn't cast blame. And for that reason, Maharaj Parikshit said, you are indeed the personality of religion. And that verse right there, it explains that, and Prabhupada elaborates it on the purport, that one who casts blame at or towards a perpetrator has to experience the same as is guilty as the perpetrator. Do you remember that purport? That's a pretty heavy reaction for casting blame at another person who has offended us. Where we become equally implicated as that person. Should I read that verse? this canto, 17th chapter. Text 22. I hope, yes. O King, O you who are in the form of a bull, you know the truth of religion, and you are speaking according to the principle that the destination intended for the perpetrator of irreligious acts is also intended for one who identifies the perpetrator. The devotee's conclusion is that no one is directly responsible for being a benefactor or a mischief monger without the sanction of the Lord. Therefore, he does not consider anyone to be directly responsible for such action. But in both cases, he takes it for granted that either benefit or loss is God sent, and thus it is his grace. In case of benefit, no one will deny that it is God sent. Just like sometimes we say, well, Krishna was very merciful to me today. Something really good happened. What about the other days? So, Prabhupada says, in case of benefit, no one will deny that it is God sent. But in case of loss or reverses, one becomes doubtful about how the Lord could be so unkind to his devotee as to put him in great difficulty. Coming back to the purport that we read for today. How is Krishna protecting his devotee? Jesus Christ was seemingly put into such great difficulty, being crucified by the ignorant, but he was never angry at the mischief mongers. That is the way of accepting a thing, either favorable or unfavorable. Thus a devotee, the identifier, is equally a sinner like the mischief monger. By God's grace, the devotee tolerates all reverses. Maharaj Parikshit observed this, and therefore he could understand that the bull was no other than the personality of religion himself. So when we read understandings that, like this that are given, really helps us to see things in a different way, in the proper way. And by doing so, because ourselves we prevent ourselves from getting our minds in so much trouble, and this enables us to glorify the devotees more, to glorify Krishna more, and to be grateful in Krishna consciousness. I was in Mayapur a couple of days years ago, and one devotee was giving a class, and he was giving a class every day. And each day during the class, he would start out by saying something he was grateful for that happened that day. Then right after that, there was a devotee who was, it was his Vyasa Puja, had a small little celebration. And he was thanking his disciples, thanking the devotees for all their nice service. And he said, there's a Sanskrit word, kṛtajñā, and that means remembering what has been done or being grateful. And then after that, I saw Rajalila. I forgot her name. Rajalila. Very nice devotee. Disciple of Bhakti Tirtha Swami. Rajalila. I said, how are you? And you know what she said? Grateful. So three times in one day, Krishna was really trying to penetrate. And And sometimes you read about these people who get in severe accidents, really horrible condition, and you see how they're grateful, how much simple faith they have in God. Even someone who doesn't have as much knowledge as we do, but they have faith, and whatever happens, they're just very grateful because it is all God's mercy. We understand specifically how it's God's mercy, and we understand why it's happening, too. So we're very grateful. We should be very grateful. So it's a nice meditation. I wanted to share that with you. And so many questions come from this theme. And perhaps you have some comments or questions that you'd like to share. Yes.
Thank you very much, Maharaj. This point about how to deal with reverses, it brings up so many questions. I know in your personal life, you've had been involved in cases of heavy attack. The one that comes to mind readily is what happened in Sarajevo. Maharaj, many of you maybe not know, he was out with the Harinam party in Sarajevo and they got physically attacked. They were beating the men, the women. So what do we do in such a case? Just say it's Krishna's mercy and just let them continue beating? I know, at least in your early days, you weren't like that. You organized a lot of resistance against attack. So what do we do? How do you apply this practically in such cases?
Remembering all those San Diego stories. Actually, we had reinforcements sent down from L.A., Radha Balaba and his crew. We were victorious. Although if you ever see Yudhisthira Prabhu in San Diego, he has a limp. That's because we were firebombed and he was sleeping on the roof. There's a low roof on top of the kitchen. He was sleeping there to protect the temple because we had been attacked in different ways. Someone threw a firebomb up on the roof. Then it fell off, but he was so furious, he got up, he ran off the roof to chase them. And smashed his foot. That's why he's limp. When I read that verse in the Bhagavatam, it was that period. That's why it had so much impact. It was a certain period where I was being attacked by Krishna's mercy, not physically, but in other ways. And I really had to do a lot of introspecting. And then Krishna sent me that verse. I was very, very happy for that. It really helped a lot. I looked that up, and Prabhupada, it says in so many places, we must defend ourselves physically. Physically. We have to maintain this body to use in Krishna's service. And we have to protect others, not just physically, but in other ways too. If a devotee is offended, not that we just stand there and say, well, it's his karma, it'll all, you know, Krishna's mercy on him, we'll just work it all out. No. When we're offended, we have to look within. Just like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakura says, don't meditate on the faults of others. Look within. Find the faults within yourself. And so if we're being attacked in that way, it's a wonderful opportunity. If we're being verbally attacked, it's a wonderful opportunity to look within. And that's what we're supposed to do. But if we see someone offending someone else, we should certainly take action. If we don't, then it's a big offense. Thank you.
Actually, that you said that in Sankirtan, attacking and this is a good point. Actually, I had very good experience I was in India and Hyderabad, and I was in such an area where not many Hindi people are there. In Hyderabad, there are some area where mostly other community people live, and I'm talking in 1978. We are doing Harinam, and those days Hare Krishna movement was not very much appreciated by any Indian people, because they used to think that we are CIA agent, you know. So whenever we used to go Harinam or book distribution, it used to be very hard on those days. And we are doing Harinam, and physically somebody came across the street and harassing us, like pulling our sikha, pulling our dhoti. He was not beating, but just harassing us, you know. And we don't know what to do. We used to be very young people, you know. We had like 7-8 guys, you know, brahmacharis just chanting. And then we only knew that when demons attack, you're supposed to chant and sing a prayers, you know. That is only we knew those days. So we start saying Namaste, Narasingha, and very vigorously was chanting. After 5-6 minutes, like the guy was harassing us, and believe me, what happened? Suddenly somebody appeared across the street, very long, tall figure, fire, he's just so mad. He crossed the street, came straight to us, and he came to this particular person that was harassing. He gave one slap, the guy fell on the ground. I never seen the man ever fall ground by the slapping, you know. He slapped, bang, and said, "You are disturbing the devotees," like that. And he wanted to kick him, you know. The guy get up, and the guy run like he was trying to save his life from. And then he told this gentleman, I don't know from where he came, you know. He just said, "Okay, Prabhus, keep chanting. Okay, keep chanting." And he just gone.
Shri Bhagavan ki.
So that was
stories. We can spend hours telling these kind of stories.
And that was my own experience, I can tell you. But that doesn't mean that it's some demons attacking physically. I think this main purpose that I maybe understand wrong is among the devotees sometimes, you know, criticism take place, some offense take place. And that way, maybe as a devotee, should just forgive.
Yes.
But not that some demons coming from outside attacking you, and it just, okay, no problem. I don't accept that way. But some devotee attacking verbally, insulting you, criticizing you, fine, this is my karma. But not from some demons, I will never take it.
Haribo. Lord Chaitanya, neither. There was one time when Lord Chaitanya was calling all the devotees when he manifested as Mahaprakash for 21 days. So many wonderful, auspicious activities. And at one point he was calling all the devotees and relishing their association and their past activities together. One of the devotees he called was Haridas Thakur. And he said, "You might remember when you were being beaten in all those 21 marketplaces, I just want to invoke my Sudarshan Chakra and kill them." And he said, "But you're so compassionate, so loving." He said, "I knew you wouldn't like that. So I just came upon your back and I accepted the beatings. And in this way, you were protected." And Haridas Thakur didn't know that, and he just swooned in ecstasy. So Krishna is furious when his devotees are being attacked. So I think it's time for the class down. I just wanted to say one thing. I have the opportunity to travel to Ajamil Prabhu now. We've been traveling all over South America and in the U.S. now, and he's got a wonderful spirit, wonderful kirtan voice, and so I feel very honored to be able to participate with him in kirtan. And we wanted to come here and also perform kirtan with all of you. So hopefully many of the devotees can come and people from outside as well. I think we'll have a wonderful evening. We'll start at 5:00 and we'll go until... Ajmil sometimes brags, he says, "I can chant all night long." So let's see. Yes, Prabhu.
Yes, I'd like to invite Gunagrahi Maharaj to partake in our Maha Harinam that we hold here in Los Angeles on Thursdays. The LA Art Walk, there's 20,000 to 25,000 people there. We get anywhere from 30 to 50 devotees to participate. We usually have to break it up in a couple of parties. Prasadam distribution is there. It is one of the, and I've been in a lot of Harinams, it's one of the highest rated Harinams in Los Angeles.
Really?
So please, if you can come to it, that's on Thursday. We congregate at 6:00 to go downtown.
Okay, we have a previous commitment in Buena Park on this Thursday. but we love to do Harinam. Ajamila is a way of getting everybody involved. Anyone who just looks at the Harinam party, he's over there getting them to chant and dance within 30 seconds. So we were doing that in, where were we? Tucson. Yeah, Tucson, the other night. So that's very, very tempting. And the next time we come, we'll definitely put that in on the schedule. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.